Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, the most recent five, including this one just about when we get off the air, are archived at the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the last five, are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to talk about dealing with experts. You know, usually we don't need an expert. We know what we're doing and the issues are fairly clear and the participants are fairly knowledgeable. But even in that circumstance, sometimes as the process goes on, we find that we could use a third-party opinion. Maybe because there are so many different opinions in the room, or maybe because we are, we've hit a bump. We're kind of stuck and we need somebody's opinion as to what to do next. And either way, an expert is called in, and you know, we often think of experts as someone who is paid by the group, by the organization, by whoever, to come and give an expert opinion, almost like in a courtroom, but not necessarily. Sometimes an expert is willing to come and give an opinion, or willing not to physically come even, to email or to Skype and give an opinion because they have an interest in the topic, or because someone knows them, of the participants. Yes. Oh, thank you for... We have a lot of participation already. Thank you very much for all of your participation and for coming. Thank you. People are saying that most of the time they use experts who somebody in the group personally knows. Good point. And we're going to talk about qualifications, I think, as the first question, because people are asking who is an expert. Who qualifies as an expert? And thank you for all of your participation. Who qualifies as an expert? You know, it's an interesting question because it doesn't necessarily have to be a piece of paper, right? Although Andrew and others are saying that an expert is validated, his expertise, his or her expertise is validated by an educational credential. The expert is validated. Their expertise is validated by an educational credential. And I've got a lot of agreement on that and some disagreement too. But, yeah, that's one way of knowing who qualifies as an expert, right? Because they have a degree in whatever it is or a credential in whatever it is. You know, and people are saying that an educational credential could be a publication. You know, that's a good point, that somebody has been published and are acknowledged as an authority. Yeah, that would make somebody an expert. Mm-hmm. You know, thank you for all of your participation. You know, Andrew and others are saying that if publication, you have to look at where it was published because it might have a bias. Good point. It depends on the publication in that way because it might be a biased thing. And that would make, it's an interesting point. People are saying that bias doesn't disqualify you. It just shows which side you're going to be on when you are an expert. Good point. That bias doesn't disqualify you, really. That it just shows it just means that people know which side that you lean towards, that your opinion leads towards. You know, Julia and others are saying that it depends on the issues. If it's very technical or complicated, you may need academic credentials. Good point. That if something is very technical or complicated, you may need academic credentials. Or, you know, technical could be something that you need experience in too, right? Yeah, it depends on... Look, somebody said it depends before I did, because you all say, I say it depends all the time. But, you know, it's a good point. It depends on the issues, whether or not you need somebody to tell you how it should work, to tell you what to do with it. Good point. You know, David and others, thank you for all of your participation, making a very good point that an expert needs to be able to clearly explain their opinions and the reasons. Did you ever find an expert? You know, people are giving me some examples of when they had experts, and it kind of, well, a lot of them are where it kind of didn't work out, which are, of course, the ones we remember the best, huh? And I can see from scanning them, and thank you for all of your participation, that a lot of times the expert didn't work out because they were too theoretical and they didn't give their reasons. And and Daniel says because they were morons. Yes, that too. But, it's a good point that you need to find someone, if you're going to have an expert, who will give their reasons clearly and say why they have that opinion, especially, as Julia says, if it's technical and complicated. We want to know how come that's your opinion. What is it that you're doing there? How come? Yeah, that's the point that we'd like to know. We'd like to know, well, why did you make that decision? How come? Very good point. Yeah, next one needs to be able to clearly explain their opinions and the reasons. You know, a lot of people are saying that you don't need academics and you will probably be better off with the explanation and the reasons and like that if they don't have such a fancy-schmancy academic background. And, you know, that's, thank you for all of your participation. That's a very good point. Ellen says that you do not need academics. You need experience with dealing with the same issues successfully. Very good point, Ellen. You do not need academics. You don't need a piece of paper. You need experience with dealing with the same issues successfully. Yeah. How did that work out for you before? How did they, you know, there's no sense, I suppose it's an American idiom, and of course this is an international, this is a global show, but you know the old expression, you don't need to reinvent the wheel each time. You don't have to start from the very beginning. Somebody else has done it successfully. We'd like to know how. We'd like to know what they did and how they applied the information to their issues in such a successful manner. That's everybody's saying that's the expert to get, somebody who knows something about it. In fact, this is a very good point that's being made. Thank you. Thank you for all of your participation. In fact, you're the expert that you might want to talk to might actually be somebody who participated in the successful outcome before. Yeah, because they know how they did it. I suppose you'd like to talk to the third-party impartial, the host, the leader, or somebody who took a real active role in how it was successfully resolved that time and how we can apply it to us. Yeah, that's expert. You know, an expert doesn't have to be – a lot of us are thinking about an expert in a very broad term, you know, like an expert in – we've got people who are experts in different kind of history and different kind of law and different kind of that people are talking about. But you know, an expert, the best kind of expert, I think, and the most useful one, is somebody who isn't an expert in the whole world, but is indeed an expert because they have done it, they've seen it, they were successful in maybe a very small category. But it's the one we're in. It's the one that we're dealing with. It's the idea that we need to culminate. You see, that's really an expert. That's somebody who can really help us. Yeah. An expert's really somebody who has specific knowledge that other participants in the group really don't have, or there's a disagreement about the specific knowledge. That's a good point, yes. That can assist us in coming to a successful conclusion, in reaching accord, in being able to go forward and get to success, right? That's all we want. So it might be somebody who just really, really knows something about this particular issue because they did it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, yeah, it's a really good point. You know, John and Liz are saying that you don't really need proof of expertise generally, and that often academics have no practical experience. Often academics have no practical experience. That's a very good point, too. That's why we need somebody who has been successful. Somebody who really, you know, they don't have to know a lot about anything. They have to know a lot about this thing, this issue. That's it. That makes them an expert. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I'm getting a whole bunch of examples, and thank you for all of your participation, where the expert that was called in had written a book or was really more like a teacher, more like an academic, and had no practical experience. You know, Natalia and others are saying that academics are often wrong because they only know theory and haven't tested it in the real world. And I've seen a lot of examples like that. It's kind of like, thank you for all of your participation. That academics are often wrong because they only know something in theory and they haven't tested it in the real world. Yeah, that's a real good point. You know, I see there's quite a bit of agreement, and a lot of people are sending me what I'm going to call kind of a scientific example, like a way to treat a fire, like a forest fire type thing, and like that, and food additives, and other kinds of science things, and an academic was consulted, and the theory was sound. It seemed really logical, and they were, you know, they went step by step, and everybody went, well, yeah, that seems reasonable and logical. Wow. And then the real-life practice, the theory didn't hold. It was wrong. Yeah. And thank you for all of your examples, and thank you for all of your participation. Yeah, that happens. You got to have somebody who can tell you, well, I suppose if it's never been done, there's theory. But a real-world example is kind of a mighty fine thing. You know what? I think our next question is, now that we've decided who can be an expert, which is really anybody who has expertise in the specific area that you're looking for, and hopefully success with their expertise and practical real-life knowledge. Yeah, I've been in practice a really long time, and I really go for practical real-life knowledge. And somewhat unimpressed by theory, because to tell you the truth, there's enough theory in the room, usually, that you don't need somebody else to bring another theory. We want to know an actual opinion. What is actually something that we can do, something that will be a good thing? That's what we'd like to know, and not kind of a soft theory. Like, yeah, that's nice, but not really. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's something that won't work in the real world. So I think our next question, because I can see that this is what's being asked, and of course this show is organic, you kind of create it, and thank you for all of your participation, is what do we want from the expert? we found somebody that we think is going to add a real dimension and going to add a real opinion and be good. But now what do we do with them? What do we want them to do? Because we have to decide that because we have to request it. We have to ask them to do it. And so we have to decide what we want, right? You know, just being an expert, we don't want to just expound on something. We want to get down to it. What do we want them to do? You know, Eric and others are saying the main thing you want your expert to do is to clearly define their reasoning with step-by-step process explained. We want to clearly have the expert clearly define their reasoning so that we can follow it, right? So that we can decide if it was really logical, if the reasoning was sound. You want them to clearly define their reasoning and give step-by-step and explain the process step-by-step. How did you reach that conclusion? That's nice, and we're not arguing with it, but how did you reach that? What was the process you used? Tell us step-by-step your reasoning, your logic. Tell us why. You know, and Linda and others are saying that not only do you want them to do step-by-step reasoning, but what you really want from the expert is practical advice about what you should do next. Practical advice. Not just there is a theory in the world, which is very interesting, and I'm always very interested in all kinds of things, aren't you? Yes, I'm always curious. Yeah, people go, yeah, we're not curious about that. We just want to know what to do. Yeah, practical advice about what to do. That's what you've called them in for, right? Him or her, that's what you've called the expert in for, to give you some sort of practical advice about what the next step should be. We're on the path. We've decided on a goal. We're having trouble reaching it. What should we do? We need to change the goal. You see, you need practical advice about what you should do. Yeah, you know, this is very. Thank you for all of your participation. You know, James has kind of summed this up. I'm getting a lot of participation, and thank you very, very much. And James says you need a conclusive opinion, not just a list of maybes. Well, you might have the expert might give you more than one scenario, right? So that might be more than one opinion. If something happens, then this. So it's not necessarily one conclusive opinion, right? Depending on the complexity of the issue. But you want a conclusive opinion, maybe more than one, and not just a list of maybes. Maybe this will happen, maybe. No, you wanted to get, if maybe this will happen, then, in my opinion, you see, and everybody's agreeing that we've all seen the list of maybes, the list of, well, if this happens, this might happen, this might happen, this might happen. Yeah, if this happens, then what? If that happens, then what? Yeah, see, I always say then what at them. Yeah, you want a conclusive opinion. It's an opinion. I mean, they're not held to it. But that's what you've brought them in for. Yeah. And, you know, you can be especially strict if you've actually hired them. People are going, well, you can't nag your friends like that. Well, you can, it's not nagging. You can, of course, be more friendly to your friends and to people who volunteered their time and are on your side, or somebody's side with the issues. And you, of course, treat them in a different manner than you treat an actual hired expert that you're paying a lot of money to. But you get to the same, if this happens, what should we do? If that happens, you know what I mean? You still want to get to a conclusive opinion, if you can, with your friends, and definitely with your hired people. Yes, yes. Okay. You know, this is interesting. A lot of people are saying this, and Richard has kind of summed it up. And thank you for all of your participation. You want to get, what we want from the expert is the question. You want to get expert advice, not just a repetition of what has already been done or said. Good point. A lot of you are making that point. Richard just kind of put it into a sentence, that you, the expert advice, you want to get expert advice, not just a repetition of what has already been done or said. Ooh, I'm getting a lot of agreement with that. Yes, we've all been, we're seen an expert who comes in or Skypes in or whatever, but is kind of asks around the group first before they give any kind of an opinion. They ask everybody what their opinion is and what they think, and they listen carefully. And then what they really do is they repeat. Yeah, people are saying repeat the party line. You know, that's kind of an idiom, and this is a global show, but they repeat what they think you want to hear. Does that make sense? Yeah, I'm getting a lot of agreement. That they don't have really an independent expert opinion. They want you to hire them again, or they want you to like them or whatever, and they want you to think, they want to think that you think they're a genius. You know what I mean? And they basically speaking, kind of rephrase whatever the general opinion is. That repetition. That wasn't helpful now, was it? Yeah, because we called you in for a different angle on it. Because if we wanted you to just repeat it, we didn't need you. That's why we're stuck, because we don't know how to go forward, right? That's why we called you in. Yeah, the repetition, yeah. I'm not sure I can use that word on the open air. But yes, the repetition of what has already been done. Mm-hmm. You know, Chandra, however, has said something very interesting. Because I got a lot of agreement with about, yeah, they come in and they see what you think, and then they mold their expert opinion to kind of mirror what has already been thought, yeah. And, you know, but Chandra has an interesting point. She says that agreement with what you've already thought may not be repetition, but it may be a validation that you're on the right track. Now, that's a different way of looking at it. That's a good point. You know, when I see it, I usually think, yeah, some expert. You just found out what we think and kind of parrot and kind of set it back. But, you know, Chandra has a very good point, looked at it the other way. Thank you. Yeah, I always say I learned something on these shows, and I hope you do too, that the agreement, the expert agreeing with the group and kind of putting it together, agreeing with it, may not be repetition. It may be a validation that you're on the right track. A validation that you're on the right track. That's a very good point. Interesting. Yeah. And I'm getting, well, there's a little bit of disagreement with that because people are insisting that it's just parroting. But, there's some agreement with that, too. It might be a good thing. You know, you might have an expert call in. You can't decide which one, which opinion, which way to go. And the expert kind of sorts it out. Yeah, or kind of, it's a good point that kind of crystallizes it. People are saying that they take all the arguments and they kind of make one, all the opinions, and kind of make one opinion out of it, with the agreement. Now, this is a very good point that a lot of people are making. Thank you very much for all of your participation. Eleanor and others are pointing out that we're talking about an expert, like we're talking about one person that comes in and tells us what to do. But we want to get more than one opinion. That's a good point, Eleanor and others. Yes, thank you. That, of course, you want to get more than one opinion. What if the expert's, well, what do we call him, a moron before? No. What if the expert is not right, right? We're kind of wrong. We want to get more than one opinion so that we can consider them all. And that often, as Eleanor puts it, often those opinions are conflicting. Now, that's always interesting, isn't it? People who are experts have conflicting opinions. Let's consider this. Let's think about that. We have called someone in who is respected and we think is good, and then we call someone else in the same credentials, or even different credentials, but also very good, and they have conflicting opinions. We got to consider that. And why? Mm-hmm. Yes. And, you know, people are saying that if you have conflicting opinions, Ishak and others are saying that you meet with all the experts to ask an explanation of why the opinions are so conflicting. Very good point. When you've got real opposite, real conflicting opinions, or even not completely, but conflicting, Ishak and others, and thank you, say that you meet, that not only do you get more than one opinion, but you have a meeting where all the experts are present to ask an explanation of why their opinions are so conflicting. How come if you guys are experts, it's so different? Good point. Thank you very much. Thank you for all of your participation. You know, and Matsu and others are making a point that if it's like a scientific or statistical information that the expert is bringing forward, something that has actual proof behind it, then you want to make them prove their methods and their conclusions. They might be conflicting because they've used a different base premise, right? And that's interesting to know. You got to know that kind of stuff. Because how are they getting their statistics or their scientific or whatever? How are they getting their numbers? That's what you want to know. Prove to me how you got your numbers. What you use, what did you use as a basic assumption when you started out? Which makes a big difference. You know, statistics are funny little things. It depends how they are looked at. And so all kinds of interesting figures. Uh-huh. That's a real good point. Mm-hmm. He wanted to show you how they did it. Yeah. How'd you get those numbers? And how come your figures are so different than someone else's? Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good point, Ishak and others, that you go and ask them. And you say, look, this expert says this and this expert says that. How come they're so different? Show me your base. Show me your assumptions. Show me how you did it. How'd you get that reasoning done there? Mm-hmm. Now, the next question that is coming up, which is a very good one, and, you know, these shows are organic, and I don't have a script. It just flows from what you guys want to ask. Yes, and thank you for all of your participation. The next question is, how do we find the right expert? Mm-hmm. We're talking about an expert like they're easy to find, but how on earth do you find one? How do you get your hands? How do you communicate with and find the expert that you need, right? Well, okay. Nadia and others, and it's not a wrong thought, of course, because A, there are no wrong thoughts, and B, it's a real good starting point. A lot of people are saying an internet search. And yes, I'm very fond of the internet. I'm very fond of research. You need to be careful that you're searching something that's reputable and not just like an advertisement, not really paid advertisement, but not just something that the so-called expert put out there about themselves. So when I look for an expert, I'm kind of fond of organizations with some reputation and like that. And then I like to search the expert just straight out on the internet and see what people have said about him or her. Yeah, but the internet's a fantastic tool. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Ken and others are saying that you have to look to what others have said on the internet and also to where the information is coming from, right? Yeah. But yeah, the internet's fantastic. And yes, and you can find an expert anywhere in the universe. Well, all right. Anywhere in the world. Global is wonderful. And then you Skype them in. You video conference them in, whatever it is that you're doing. Or even audio. I mean, Skype is kind of funny visually because sometimes I know I've had this experience. If all the equipment is not fantastic, sometimes the mouth doesn't sync with the face, and it's really distracting. But audio is usually excellent, and you can use a conference call. You can use a phone. Yeah. But Ken and others are saying that you look to what others have said. Yeah, you look to, like, a recommendation. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people, Peggy and others, are saying that you should get a resume from the expert before you use them, especially if they are somebody you're going to pay money to. I mean, this is, and even if not, it would be kind of nice, not maybe a real formal resume, depending on the circumstances and depending on the complexity and depending on who it is, but you need a resume with, like, recommendations and references. Mm-hmm. And the main thing that I always say is, and I'm always surprised by this, people don't check the references. We should check them. Somebody said that this person recommends them. We should probably ask. I mean, you know, I can say I'm recommended by President Obama, but, well, you should probably call the man and find out, yes. So, yeah, so you need to actually check the references. Mm-hmm. Ian and others are making a good point that if you're going to have references and recommendations and like that, they need to be professional and not just personal, because we're asking something in a professional manner, and we want their expertise not on the fact that they are a wonderful human being, which they undoubtedly are, but that they have some expertise in the area that we're looking for. Mm-hmm. Vijay and others are saying that a professional organization recognition would be nice. It doesn't have to be academic, but it would be nice if they had some sort of recognition. You know, a lot of people are saying the Better Business Bureau. That's kind of an American thing, but they're probably all over the world, and this is a global show, of course. There are it's like an accreditation organization that shows that you have been not complained about, really, and that you've been recommended by consumers, essentially speaking. And depending on the type and type of issue, that might be an interesting indication that they've been recommended by a third party, I don't know what to call them, like a validating agency. You can't exactly buy a recommendation. I think you get registered with them, but then they grade you on recommendations and complaints. Yeah, so that kind of a designation would be interesting. You know, Christine and others, and this is probably the most usual way, and quite frankly, I think it's not even a bad one, that you take recommendations from people you personally know and respect. No one others are using the term ask around, which is kind of an American idiom, and we're global, but it means that you kind of see who else has used somebody in this specific situation. Mm-hmm. And you might even, if you find somebody on the internet or you find somebody through a professional organization, you might still kind of ask around to know if somebody has indeed successfully used them. Mm-hmm. You know, Noah and others are talking about social media resources like LinkedIn, yeah, which is, I think it's kind of global. It's a little bit more American than it is the rest of the world. But, yeah, LinkedIn, people are saying LinkedIn is all over. It's the internet. And, yeah, to use social media also and kind of see what you got. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the next question that's being asked. Now that we've found this expert and now that we've kind of vetted him or her, what happens if you get the wrong expert? You've looked, you've tried, and this person is just, they've caused more disagreement than they are trying to get to the next step, than they are being a help to the process. What if you got the wrong person? What if it's really not, didn't work out? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Leslie and others say you fire the expert and get another opinion. Yes, you tell him to go off. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and Marta and others say that you get more than one opinion anyway, even if the expert agrees with you. Yeah, the trick is that sometimes Yeah, this is a good point. Thank you for all of your participation. Sometimes when you get the expert really, really disagrees. Thinks you're completely on the wrong track. And that your conclusions are plain ordinary wrong. Well, you found them, and you asked their opinion, right? And now they've disagreed. Well, you can get another opinion. You should get another opinion, no matter what, even if the expert agrees with you. And if you've got somebody who you've vetted and respect their opinion as an expert in this specific situation, maybe you ought to take a good, long, hard look at what you've been doing and your opinions. Because maybe, well, they might not have to take the opinion completely of the expert. Yeah, people use the word modification. Yeah, maybe you should modify what you've been doing. I mean, you did ask, and if you were sure, you wouldn't have asked, right? Right, yeah. Justin and others are saying that it depends on the level of expertise and the complexity of the issues. You should consider the expert opinion even if you don't agree. Yeah, I think you should consider the expert opinion that disagrees with you because it's a different way of thinking. And if you've got a group and we're all thinking in the same way and we're not getting to the successful conclusion, and we call in an expert who says something else, thinking in a different way, maybe we might think about whether or not we need to revise our opinion. What an idea. Yeah, and this is a very good point, too. Liam and others are saying that you need, when you've got an expert that really disagrees with you, you need to find out why. Why the expert disagrees. And that goes back to our thought about what we want from the expert, doesn't it, that we just talked about. That you need to find out their reasoning, find out their logic, find out step by step why it is that they are so different than what you have discussed and what you have decided. Why do they disagree? And, you know, this is a really good point, too. Emily and others are saying that not only do you find out why the expert disagrees with you, but you find out why the participants in the group disagree with the expert. It's a circle, right? You want to know why the expert thinks that and disagrees, but why the participants disagree with the expert, so that you can reach a negotiated compromise, maybe, or so that you can really have a think and maybe even change the course, change the path, change the goal. Depends how specific your goal is, right? You might need to modify it. Yeah, but let's find out how come we've now got this kind of difference here. Why the participants disagree with the expert, and why the expert disagrees, why the expert opinion is so different. Yeah. And yes, people are going, that leads us to talking about using food as a tool, right? We slid right into there. And those of you who have been here before, and thank you very much for coming. And also, if you would like to hear prior shows, the last five are archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com, the most recent five. All of the shows are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. But Recipe for Peace Now, right, creates a convivial atmosphere so that we can all talk about these things, yes, and find out what we're doing. And the way we do it is because we know that whenever you have human beings in the same room, somebody's going to need to have a little bit of a think. Somebody might need to compromise. And the knee-jerk reaction to any kind of change or thought or compromise is no. Let them do it. If you let people out of the room in the no condition, it will solidify. So we want to keep them in the room. And how do we do such a thing? No, duct tape is illegal. We use food because it keeps a convivial atmosphere. It allows a time out. Let's go eat. Let's go make this. Let's go see how that's cooking on the stove. Let's have a snack. It gives a lovely time out so that we can remain, well, convivial to each other. And it keeps us in the room, and it keeps us doing something that is a very overused word, but it keeps us networking, keeps us talking to each other, makes us find out something about the other person that is interesting, that is like us, you see? And so the tool is the food. It is we do not feed people because we are necessarily hungry, although it might be dinner and it might be delightful. But the real reason is to keep us in a convivial atmosphere and to keep us talking to each other. Good. So, and of course, I think, in Recipe for Peace Now, kind of advocates a potluck, generally speaking, where everybody brings something, just because it's interesting and it gives you something to talk about. Although sometimes people cater it and like that. The one thing that I always say, and yes, people are saying, you're going to say this. Yes, I am. And I know I say this every show, but it's so important. If you're going to have food, you must communicate with everybody who's going to participate concerning dietary, religious, and allergic prohibitions. You don't want anybody to get sick or hurt, or they want to have a good time or offended. And also, you must tell everyone that when they are bringing something, it needs to be labeled. Not just what is it, meatloaf. No, it needs to be labeled what is in it so that we can decide if we would like to eat it, if we can, if it's got something that we don't eat. So you need to label everything. Also, those of you who have been here before, and thank you, there's lots of people. And those of you who are new, thank you for coming. Come again. Know that I think that the host should have extra food, because I hate to run out, and that we should have one safe recipe. Now, what's a safe recipe? It's a recipe that has ingredients that your participants would be familiar with. So I give ingredients that my participants would be familiar with, but you have to judge that, and are generally not something that people are allergic to, and you've taken the survey among the people, and you are going to label it, right? Right. Excuse me. And so our safe recipe today, it's kind of seasonal, I don't know, it's fall out here, is going to be a pumpkin and cinnamon pasta. Oh, it's just yummy. And it's very pretty, and everybody likes it. I also like food that's easy to serve, that a spoon will do without making too much of a mess. Yeah, because you want to get on the carpet. Okay, so what have we got? We've got a pound of pumpkin that we're going to cube. Now, if you're a finer person than I am, you will use fresh pumpkin, and you will cook it and make it and steam it and until it's nice and tender. And you're going to drain it really, really well, right? Right. Yes, people are saying they know exactly what I'm going to say. Where I am, pumpkin, in cubes, is readily available to me frozen. And I will use the frozen because it is so convenient and so inexpensive and so, well, time conscious. Because you don't have to mess with a big, hard pumpkin. So I'm going to use the frozen. If you use fresh, you will have a much finer product probably than I do. But if you're going to use frozen, you need to defrost it and drain it so that it's, well, so it's the equivalent of the fresh. Right, right. Then we're going to have a couple pounds of nice pasta, the kind that is not skinny noodles, like a penne or a bow tie or those corkscrew ones or whatever, but something that is a... Yeah, people are saying a tube. Not necessarily a tube, but something that is not long, narrow pasta noodles. Right? Right. We have a big pat of butter, an onion that we're going to finely chop, 3 garlic cloves crushed. Yes, I use a lot of garlic. You don't like so much, just take some out. 2 teaspoons of ground cinnamon, Yummy. A cup of heavy cream. Yes, do not skimp on the cream. It won't. I know that there's half and half and stuff, but if you skimp on it, then it won't adhere to the pasta real nice. And it's, I mean, it's not a diet dish. So a tablespoon of honey. Yes, it's going to be delightful. And we're going to have about a half a cup of grated Parmesan. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So prepare the pumpkin if you're going to use fresh. Make it soft and edible. Drain and defrost if you're going to use frozen, which I'm going to do. And, of course, I'm going to cook the pasta and set it aside and drain it. Cook it al dente and drain it. So now we're going to, and that's all been done. So we're going to melt the butter in a big frying pan, and we're going to cook the onion until it's nice and soft. It smells nice and is translucent. And then we're going to add the garlic and the cinnamon. I'm going to stir it all around and cook it for another, I don't know, 2 minutes, but until it all gets incorporated and smells really, really nice. We've got that all going into the pan. We're going to now pour in our cream, and we're going to add the pumpkin and the honey, and we're going to simmer the whole thing for about 5 minutes, maybe a little bit longer, until the sauce reduces and thickens slightly, and it's all heated through. A little bit longer if you're using cold pumpkin, because you took it out of the freezer, but you did defrost it, right? Right. And you drained it off real nice, but it's still cold. So we're cooking this all down, and it's simmering and like that. It's now all hot, and it's thick with the cream and the honey, and oh, it's just yummy. And the pumpkin. Before we go to serve it, we're going to add the Parmesan. And we're going to melt it all in. Mm-hmm. So it's all nice and cheesy and gooey. Mm-hmm. We've got now this big pan of yummy sauce. We're going to put it over the pasta, which is still hot. I mean, you rewarm the pasta if it's cold, right? And we put it over the pasta and we toss it all around. Delicious. We're done. That's it. It was easy to do. You might even do it if you've got the facilities with the group. You know how I like that? I think it makes a nice group participation idea, right? And you can, it doesn't take very long, especially if you've pre-cooked the pasta, but then you have to rewarm it, right? Yes, people are asking me how I rewarm it. I put it back in the water. You want to know the honest truth. I put it in a microwave safe pot, like a plastic pot, a plastic bowl. And I sprinkle it with some water so that it's moist, stick a piece of saran wrap over the top, poke it with a fork, and I put it in the microwave. It makes it hot, it makes it steam, it tastes just fine, and it's fast, and you do it right away, so it's hot. Yes, but not with the stuff in it, right? That, not with the sauce. That's before you put the sauce on if your pasta has gone cold, sitting on the side. Yeah. And then you put the sauce on the hot pasta, and mix it all through and eat it immediately, and it's just yummy. Which is why this is kind of a really good dish to make together. Because it's easy, it doesn't have too many ingredients, and it smells wonderful, and it doesn't take too long. Yeah. Yeah, if you've got the facilities, I think that actually adds to the bonding, so to speak. It adds to the experience. People say that is not a cooking experience because it is a demonstration. Okay. Yeah, it kind of is. I'm not real fond of it depends on your group. If the group is small enough and you got some confidence because you've dealt with them before that they can well without having trauma, you could have people participate in the process by prepping things and stirring things and like that. I'm not big on that because I think that it's better to have the demo and then everybody eats. I'm afraid that I'm the person that handles the cooking because I don't want to have any oopses, you know? And so I'm kind of fond of doing that. Okay, so that's our safe recipe. Why is it safe? Because you can pretty much see the ingredients. You can look at them. It's not something that usually people are allergic to or have a prohibition against. Yeah, basically vegetarian. And if you're allergic to gluten, with the pasta and like that, you can see it. And also it's been carefully labeled that people know there's cream in it, cream and cheese, so dairy. But, yeah, and if somebody's, if you've got prohibitions like that, you have already taken the survey, right? Right. So the next one is going to be our adventure recipe. And when I get all done with this, you're going to think, why on earth was that the adventure recipe? There's nothing in it that's that adventurous. And this is my adventure recipe for a really good reason. Because it's chicken, it's like chicken strips with walnut. It's a lovely Turkish recipe. It's actually got like a bread sauce to it. And the people that would be my participants here might not ever have eaten the dish, although it's popular in Turkey. I have a Turkish friend who gave me this recipe, and it's just marvelous. It's just yummy. It has walnuts in it, and they don't show because they're chopped up. So that's why they're actually put into the sauce, so to speak. And it needs to be carefully labeled because people are allergic to nuts like that. Yes, don't be a surprise. And if I make this, even if I've taken the survey and everybody can eat walnuts, I actually, pardon me, garnish the dish with obvious walnuts on the top. So that you can see that there's nuts inside. Yeah, because you don't want somebody to get, you know, not have a good time. So here we go. But this is a wonderful recipe, and it's just beautiful besides. It's just lovely. So we're going to have two chickens that we're going to trim off all the fat and like that. And we're going to break them into strips, to slice them up. Three slices, maybe four slices of bread, like thick white bread, not the funny commercial type that you get in the States and probably everywhere in the world nowadays. Depending, could be four slices, depending how thick your bread is. But we're going, like stale, not green, but not real soft bread. If you are going to use something that you've just bought, something fresh, like a sourdough bread, something with some toughness to it, I'm going to call it. And you take off the crusts because the crusts are going to look ugly. A cup of milk. Mm-hmm. And about a cup and a half of walnuts. Around here you can get walnuts in a bag that are pieces, and that's just fine because we're going to grind them up anyhow. And then you need another half a cup of walnuts, maybe more. Even so, maybe even more than that, for the garnish that we just talked about, right? Right. Four garlic cloves. I actually put in a little more garlic than that, but I get complaints that you guys think I put in too much garlic. I would say five garlic cloves. Three celery sticks that we're going to chop up. This is actually delicious. It's got a lot of spice to it. We're going to use four cloves, not the garlic kind, just the regular cloves, like you think. And four of those little allspice beads that you get in a jar. I don't even know what allspice is. Is that a spice all by itself? People are saying they're called berries, I guess. But they're little round beads, and they're called allspice, little round spices. They're called allspice, yeah. And two bay leaves. We're going to try to remember to get all this stuff out of there, right? Right. Okay. And we're also going to have an onion that we're going to make into chunks. And two carrots that we're going to chop. Okay. We're going to put the chicken into a nice big pot. And we're going to put all the stock ingredients over it. The onion, the carrot, the celery, the cloves, the allspice, the bay leaves. And we're going to either cover it with water, because we're going to boil the chicken. And we're going to heat it and simmer it for about an hour until it makes chicken. You know what I mean? Until it's soft and we've got broth and all the nice things and all the herbs and the cinnamon and the cloves and like that have all gotten in. Yeah. And so we're going to do that, but people use water. I personally use chicken stock, but that's not traditional, I understand. Because I like the extra flavor. I think everything should have lots of flavor. And chicken stock to me is water that you boil chicken in. So I use a commercial chicken stock and just put it in. Okay, so we've now made the stock. We've boiled it all up. It's all delicious. And the chicken is cooked. It's taken about an hour. We've simmered it. We've covered it. We've simmered it. It's now chicken. It's now edible. So we take the chicken out, and we boil the stock another 15 minutes until it's reduced. And then you need to fish out the cloves and the allspice and the bay leaves. And pretty much you need to strain the thing. Yeah. And so we're going to reduce it, and I'm going to strain it, and we're going to have our lovely stock. Now we're going to let the chicken cool a little bit. We're going to throw off the skin, because we don't want the skin anymore. And we're going to tear it into thin strips. I use a fork. It's nice and soft. And it's all, you know, we've put the two chickens in there, and they're all nice and soft and cooked. I just kind of shred it. I'm going to call it shred it. Shred it into thin strips, yeah. Now, you remember our bread that we had? Because it goes into the sauce, really. We're going to soak the bread in the milk for a few minutes until the milk is absorbed, like you're making French toast, so to speak. And we're going to pound our mortar. We're going to use a mortar and pestle or a little food processor, whichever you like to do. And we're going to grind those walnuts and the garlics into a paste. You use the food processor, your four garlic cloves and your cup and a half of shelled walnuts. Put them in a little food processor. My friend uses a mortar and pestle, which is very nice, and it's lovely, but I'm going to use a food processor. Now, we're going to pour that out now because it's in the food processor, right? And we're going to kind of beat in the bread so that it's nice and fluffy. Yeah, it's all mixed together. And then we're going to add the chicken into it. Uh-huh. And we're going to add that in. And as we are doing it, as we're using the fork on it, we're going to put in spoonfuls of the stock that we strained off. And we're going to put it in so that we bind it and the whole thing gets kind of light and kind of creamy looking, kind of yummy. It's good. We're going to work through the bread and the garlic and the mixture that we made. Mm-hmm. And we're going to add in the bread and then the walnut and garlic paste in the bread and like that. And we're going to incorporate it into the chicken using the stock gradually as we go so it doesn't get runny, right? And it makes kind of how to describe it, it's kind of thick and fluffy-ish. So anyway, so that is our adventure recipe. And I suddenly got that because I looked up and I see we're running out of time. And it's like, my goodness, our time together is nearly up. And so that's our adventure recipe because it has walnuts that don't show and also a few spices that I personally don't use all the time, like allspice. I don't know if people are allergic to allspice, but you got to tell them about it. Yeah. And this is just delicious. It has this wonderful consistency with the chicken. And when you serve it, it scoops out and makes a little pile, makes kind of a firmness to it. It's just yummy. People are asking if you serve it over rice or couscous or something. Yeah, you could. You all know that I like rice because I have a big rice cooker and everybody likes rice just fine. This would be absolutely lovely with the rice on the side, but I wouldn't put it on something because the something will get too incorporated into it, and it's really a nice consistency on its own. Yeah. So anyway, that's a Turkish walnut chicken bread sauce recipe, and it's our adventure recipe because the nuts don't show, and it has kind of unusual spices. But yeah, you beat in, and if you have stock left over, yes, you just drink it because it's delicious. You've just made wonderful chicken soup, and yeah, and you will have some left over because you've got a lot of stock and you don't want to make this runny. So you've got soup as a bonus. This is all just yummy and delicious. Yes. And so that's our adventure recipe. Right. And we'll have labeled everything and everyone will know what's in it and everyone will have a good time and be convivial. Fantastic. So our time together is nearly up. Thank you very much for all of your participation. Thank you for coming. Please do come again. If you want to contact us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is recipeforpeacenow.com. The last 5 shows are archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the last 5, are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.